Good morning and welcome to the last Preventing Grace podcast for January, because we're almost in February, so that's fantastic. With me here this morning is Matt Kennedy, who's always here, and a couple of dogs. Today we thought we would talk about, we're not going to talk about immigration and how evil Trump is, because we're going to wait a few more days to find out what's really going on. Already it's less panicky. We need to be less panicky than we were over the weekend.
Yeah, I just don't trust either HuffPo or Breitbart, mm-hmm. or even Washington Post or Fox to tell me what the thing says. I agree that, I think we both agree with the principle that it's good to have shelter for refugees in our country. I think we just want to see what.
Yeah, what is he really saying?
Yeah, I can't.
And also, I would just like to mention that the state is not the same as the church. So, the state and the church.
That's true. I mean, the state has the role of protecting the nation from harm. So you can't have, policies that we would have in a congregation for welcoming people in.
Right.
That you have for a state. At the same time, I mean, I think part of our founding principles have been to provide shelter for people who are being persecuted in their own countries. Right. So I don't want to. So anyway, we haven't read. I posted just about 10 minutes ago the actual
order.
So I think, especially if you've been reading reports from either side, they're so crazy. But
so we're not going to talk about
that. We're not going to talk about it, so just read the order.
Yeah.
And then maybe we'll talk about it next week after we've had a chance to digest.
If we feel like it.
If
there's another new outrage, we might talk about that instead.
Oh, but there's going to be lots of outrages.
There's going
to
be
outrage. Say, one of the interesting things about the last 2 weeks is that, it's not been boring to read the news or to watch.
No, but it's kind of, I was exhausted before the election, obviously, because it had lasted so long, and
I thought it would kind of calm down.
It's not calming down, so I think we're headed into four years of absolute panic. So at
it's
some
like
point, hyperthyroid as a nation. Yeah, the whole nation has acute hyperthyroidism, just like me. So, no, we're not going to talk about that. Instead, we're going to talk about. I already forgot what it was. Can you remind me?
We were going to talk about the two marches in Washington, D.C.
Oh, that's right. That's right. See, it's old news. I've already forgotten because it was a whole week ago.
Well, one of the bad things about the refugee thing coming out is that it further obscured the March for Life, which was already obscured.
Wasn't even covered by CNN at all.
I was checking while we were in the emergency room, I kept checking my phone, looking for some kind of indication that something was going on in Washington, D.C., and CNN didn't seem to notice.
I
remember with the Women's March, they had correspondents all along.
Yeah.
Throughout the crowd, talking to people. They sent foreign correspondents to talk to about women's marches throughout the country, throughout the world. So big difference. You wrote some articles, though, about the Women's March, and you had some people who were very happy with you, but also some people who were not very happy with you.
Well, so you have to be feminist, I guess, in today's world. Otherwise, you're not a person. You can't.
Well, if you're a woman, you have to. If you disagree.
And you're a man, you have to be feminist.
So if you disagree with feminism, how do you have to. I mean, what's the best way to couch that? I mean, the modern feminist way of thinking?
I'm not sure. I think you just have to be full bore on board with whatever women want to be doing and
I've heard women who are more conservative kind of say, well, I'm a feminist, of course, and then go on to dismantle
everything about feminism.
Right. So how would you define, if you said you would no longer like to take the title feminist, how are you defining that?
Well, I probably was never a feminist, even though I went to college and I studied probably did some female What is it called?
You did a lot of
I did really literary radical theory, oh, gay and queer theory.
Yeah.
Gender identity politics.
Yeah, so how'd you get out of that mess without becoming a
crazy person? It was fun. I thought it was funny and interesting to kind of know what people were thinking. And I'm interested in language, so it was interesting how language was being dismantled and corrupted. And I thought it was an intellectual exercise at the time. Didn't know that I was being prepared for the entire rest of modern life by being in college. But even at the time, I didn't think it was interesting enough to become, you know, wrapped up in identity politics. So I think women should be allowed to be human. That's as far as my feminism would go. I think women should be allowed to be human.
In what way? What do you mean?
And so should men. They should be allowed to have personhood. You should value the personhood of other people. You shouldn't mush them into the ground. You shouldn't cover them up with a lot of cloth so that you can't even tell they're there. They're just like black ghosts walking around. You shouldn't kill them in the womb at a higher rate than you kill boys. You shouldn't force them into slavery. You know, that's the kind of feminism that I'm on board with. Letting women be people. Letting them be educated and have a life. And if they don't want to get married, they don't have to get married. If they want to get married, they can get married. They have volition and personhood.
Should women vote?
I don't know, man. I thought women should vote until I saw the Women's March, and then I was like, I don't feel like any of these women should be allowed to vote. In fact, I'd almost be willing to give up my vote just so that Ashley Judd could not vote anymore. I'd be willing to sacrifice my vote. No, I mean, I think women should vote, I guess, but they're kind of ruining it, aren't they? And a lot of men looking in like, oh my word, I can't believe we gave women the vote. That was a bad...
It is interesting.
Milk was a bad choice.
I was about to say something, but I'm not going to say.
You're not allowed to, though, are you? Because you're a man.
If you look at,
so you can't. You can't speak. Can you?
The most destructive presidents to human life, with regard to babies in the womb, anyway, have been elected by. I mean, if women were not voting, they would not have been elected.
Oh my gosh!
Just a point.
I can't believe you said that out loud.
See, you said that's what I was about not to say, but you said I couldn't say it. So, if we hadn't given,
I kind of think that we shouldn't have let people who didn't own property vote. So, I would have gone all the way back
because there were certain race. I mean, that could have racial and and so I don't agree with that at all.
Okay, if you don't have a stake in the system functioning, then
women have a stake in the system, wouldn't you say?
To blow it up. They have a stake in blowing it all up. That's what they seem to want to do.
Well, the modern feminists,
people cuss everywhere, wear ridiculous looking outfits and hats.
How vile. Why would you take your daughter to a march?
And your grandmother.
Wearing
you know what? I'm going to take my granny.
I'm not even say the word of the hat.
And I'm
going
to stick a hat on her head. Because it's not humiliating
at
all.
And call it a whatever. I'm not going to say what they call it.
Yeah, we can't even talk about it because it's so vile.
It was the march was just ugly. It was vulgar. It was sick.
So a lot of people said because I wrote about how I thought it was ugly. And I think that's part of the downfall of feminism is that it's not. It's ugly to look at. When you decide that you're God and everybody has to bow before you, that actually is ugly. That's not beautiful to look at. And I think men have to, in this climate, have to bow before the woman. I think that's one reason why Trump won, because his ladies sort of flutter around him without speaking, sort of this fantastic patriarchal orange figure. Not really cool with it either, actually. but he does, he's not subservient to the women in his life, and I think that's appealing to the average man who's tired of being told what to do.
Yeah,
and just had enough.
Yeah, I think it's probably true. I do think you make a distinction, and I think it's probably what women who've studied feminism might come back at you with, which you make a distinction between the more modern radical form of feminism and maybe the feminism of the suffrage movement and the feminism.
Well, so there's, I guess we're in third wave feminism now. Yeah, we've had several waves.
You do know a little bit about this, having studied it.
Not enough, though. Like, I haven't read enough about third wave feminism. So a lot of, I was really impressed because a lot of pro-life groups that had been turned away from the march.
Yeah.
A lot of pro-life women went anyway just to be there, which I thought was great. You should go out into the world and push back. And so I think some pro-life, third wave Catholic feminists who think that women should be human, essentially, and should have volition, went to the march. And I do think that was fantastic and interesting that they went. I'm not that pugnacious. I don't like to get into an argument.
So what's third wave feminism?
I'm not really. I haven't read enough about it. I think it's trying to return back to, like, recover the ridiculousness of the first two waves or the second wave of feminism, where you had to be a man or you had to enter in the male sphere and take over.
Feminism of that wave was the way to be a woman is to be a man.
Yeah, with your boxy suit and your I can do it better than you can attitude. And I think it's not that appealing, and a lot of young women want to be able to stay home and be with their kids if they want to and want to have the choice and don't want to have to destroy everything in their wake. So that's great.
So third wave feminism wants to maybe return women to being women. Is that the idea?
Partly,
I think. They can't say that, can they?
No, what are you going to...
I mean, even the idea now of having a woman's march, isn't that somewhat offensive?
I know. What about all the transgenders?
Right, exactly. Are men who identify as women allowed to...
I think there were a lot of men who were allowed to...
be in the woman's march.
I know. Can we talk about gender at all?
I don't know. I mean, I would think the name of the march itself would be something that would be off limits for a liberal. The Women's March.
And yet people embraced it so much.
Yeah, yeah.
What did you think of Ashley Judd's speech?
I was sickened by it. I thought, man, first of all, she was reading a poem from a 17-year-old. 19-year-old, which was logically incoherent. I mean, was the person who wrote the poem in school? Did the person go to, or was that the product of a public education? Because if so, thanks be to God that we homeschooled, because that was awful. I mean, there may have been some, you know, shreds of rational thought in there amidst the detritus of...
Check your patriarchy, man. Right. You can't say that about women not being able to think. What's wrong?
Well,
with
no.
You?
I mean, look. There have been very intellectually sound men and women on the left who have more than a century now been able to articulate a radical position on certain issues in a way that has. A step-by-step logical process. So, you know, Marx, or who I think was a horribly destructive person, but...
He could think his way out of a paper bag.
Yeah, right. So, but, you know, just follow... There was a long line of articulate radicals from the left that are able to speak and make cogent criticisms of what they consider the inequities of capitalism and patriarchy and all the other bugbears of the left, and they can do it well. But Ashley Judd, reading a 19-year-old's wildly irrational
reactionary
thoughts. And vile too. I
mean, yeah.
I thought that was, why would you do that? I mean, when you have the national stage, why would you read that poem? I mean, surely in the over 100 years of radical thought,
There was some other poem.
There's some other poem that you might read.
Well,
and she did it with such passion.
I think she was unhinged. That was my sense. So it's interesting how hysterical, really. I mean, if you want to belittle women and just put them down and say ugly things about them, you know, hysteric. What were people saying about women
if
through
men,
the centuries?
If men are
They're
watching,
hysterical.
If men,
they can't think.
Right.
They don't have anything to say. They shouldn't be, you know, they should stay at home quietly with their children because, oh my word, what's going to happen?
Oh, absolutely.
And I think we kind of got past that. That was great. And then Ashley Judd just brought it all back.
No,
I mean,
really,
any self-respecting man looking at her is going to think, oh my word.
If you take a man from 70 years ago who thinks that women are just inherently irrational and unable to think,
yeah.
Or take a man from the first century, because that was why women weren't allowed to
right.
Jewish women weren't allowed to.
Do you want her on your jury or a witness in the courtroom?
We're not allowed to testify in court. You know, that's why the apostles didn't believe the women when they came back
because,
to say that Jesus had risen.
I mean, look at them.
Right. So now, and that was horrible. They should have listened to women because women are not inherently incoherent. But you just transport one of those men to today and have them watch the women's march.
Women's march. And suddenly all this, the great things for women in the Bible are like go up in a poof of smoke.
Right.
Like all the male writers of the Bible will be like, you know
yep.
what?
This is not strong
We're
enough.
Not... Let's get rid of the neither slave nor free, male nor female. Like, let's just go with male, because this is super embarrassing.
Now, having said all that, I do think... So, I think while also we're looking at a massive failure of masculinity, too, though, because I think that a lot of the men, a lot of the women, anyway, just seem... who are angry with men, they had really probably bad fathers and not good boyfriends and husbands. I mean, part of that's produced... is the effect of feminism. In
it's
the
a
sense
circle,
that,
though. It's like,
yeah, that
you know, one
men,
produces the other.
Right. If men don't feel like... I do think there's a natural, God-given inclination in the heart of a man to protect and provide for women. And that should be there anyway. If it's not, it's a deficiency. It's a twisting of our nature. But feminism dismantles that, right? So a woman is... your equal and doesn't need your help. Equal in this, not just in her essence or her ontology, but equal in her capacities. So she can tote that barge and lift that veil just as you can, and she can.
What?
Yeah, I don't know.
Lift that veil.
Yeah,
right. Or, she doesn't want to do that ditch. She wants to take your office job. She doesn't want to take your manual labor. Dig
right.
that ditch
right,
and
no,
be
right,
paid
right.
the same for digging that ditch. She wants to take your office job, work half time. So she can go home and be with her children and still take your take your job and then tell you to shut up.
Right. So then that produces in men
a sense of helplessness.
And misogyny.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Right, right. So there's why would I protect, you know, if my daughter you want your, I think the modern male thinks, well,
yeah.
I want my daughter to be a warrior, I want my daughter to be a
good luck to you.
Yeah, so I'm going to raise her like I'd raise a man. And, I mean, putting...
Or probably, though, the modern man isn't allowed to have an opinion about his daughter. Because if he's married, his wife will sort that out for him. And he just needs to fork over the money. And I don't know. I think there's a deep, deep helplessness for men. And because they've been cut out of the picture, they're not allowed to say, I'm really unhappy in this scenario.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is awful. You should listen to me. I have things to contribute. I have thoughts, too. He's not allowed to say any of that without, unless he's agreeing and saying yes, then he needs to be quiet. And
right. Well, it was interesting watching... we sometimes watch sitcoms and and watching the difference between Everybody Loves Raymond and Mayberry or what's it called?
Andy Griffith.
Andy Griffith or where Andy Griffith often Aunt B
is wrong.
Is wrong and irrational,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. And he corrects her.
And Andy Taylor is sometimes that way too, but there's
but less
there's,
so.
Less so. He's kind of the wise person in the show, thing, right?
Yeah.
But in Everyone Loves Raymond, all the men there are just total
are wrong
idiots.
All the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. And I think that, and it's funny. I mean, I still like watching it. It's funny. But that's the image that men have of themselves, and that's the image that our culture produces of men.
That women have of their husbands.
Yeah. That's true. Women infantilize their husbands.
Yeah.
Now.
And their children.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's why I'm not, I don't, I think that's when I talk about you should be allowed to be human, in Everybody Loves Raymond, the men aren't fully human in that system. The woman, who actually the actress is a, I think she's a Christian. She's really pro-life. I love her. She did the part beautifully. she portrayed it just spot on. But, you know, he's allowed to be a child that never grows up. And he's stuck in that. And I don't think in that scenario, he's not fully human in a way that probably Aunt B in Andy Griffith is fully human.
Right.
Because he's respectful of her. And he makes room for her even when he tells her she's, I mean, both people should be able to tell each other that they're wrong in a respectful,
right,
kind way that lets the other person go free, lets the other person make choices and have words, and
right.
I don't think that exists. Personhood for others doesn't exist in our culture really anymore.
I do think there's a going back to what I was trying to say earlier, I think that men are at the heart to blame for it. I think we will be held accountable for feminism.
Mm. Yeah.
In the same way that a husband might be held accountable for the sins of his wife. Because it's kind of like when a marriage is broken.
Mm-hmm.
Our first strategy is, I think, to say to the man, okay, well, regardless of what she's done.
Yeah.
If you want to fix this thing, here's how you need to start acting.
Yeah.
And one way you need to start acting is like Christ to his church.
Mm-hmm.
And you love her and express that to her. You be tender to her. You care for her. You go behind her and help her with her stuff that she's doing in the house and with the kids. And you usually men in really tense marriage situations retreat.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of it is you need to engage, not retreat. And take an active role in the home, not just at work. Don't just come home and go back to your man cave and hide. Help with the laundry, help with the clothes, help with the children, and don't expect her to react to you nicely.
Yeah.
For at first, but you do that. It's agape. You give yourself to that person first, and then you do that for a few weeks, and then what happens is, especially if she's a Christian, the woman will respond. She probably couldn't help herself, but respond to that with granting to him leadership,
mm-hmm.
Respect.
I mean, I don't even think, I mean, we use the word leadership sometimes, but I don't even think we're not even to that point. I think a lot of women just need to let their husbands speak.
Right.
Like, say something that they really think or feel out loud.
Right. No,
not filtering it for whether it's okay,
mm-hmm.
or it's acceptable, but just let your husband say whatever he wants to say and then deal with it. I mean, we most marriages, I don't even think, are in the position to have the man.
No.
Like, the word leadership, I think, is incomprehensible to most people because they're not even to the point where the man is allowed to be a person.
Right.
And if you allow the other person to be who they are and speak, you're going to sometimes give way to them. You're going to sometimes let them go ahead of you. And that eventually leads towards
he might be right.
Leadership.
Sometimes.
He might be right sometimes. He might have an idea. He might
So what the model though is I mean, I agree with you there, but I think part of the reason that that's happened
is because men just retreated.
Yeah, and they sit on the couch.
Yeah.
And they watch TV, the football games, and they whine and cry when they think something bad goes on. And they treat their wives like their mommies.
Yeah.
And so the wives act like that.
Mm-hmm.
But what
produces ultimately, I think, is so interesting. It is hysteria. Mm-hmm. You have a whole culture of men who retreat in the face of women getting whatever they want. You end up with Ashley Judd. You don't end up with, Margaret Thatcher. You know, in a culture where the men are just have all gone to Best Buy to buy another electronic device and just be gone emotionally from the space, you don't end up with Margaret Thatcher. You end up with Ashley Judd. That's what happens to the whole culture. And it's sick. I mean, it's gross looking. It's broken. That's why I said it was aesthetically broken.
Yeah.
Feminism has an aesthetic problem.
Right. So that's how you fix a marriage, by having a man start stepping in and mm-hmm. doing what he's been called to do from the beginning anyway, protecting and providing, engaging. I think maybe the culturally that there's something to that too. I mean, taking the role of a protector and provider and teaching our men to do that.
Okay, so in a personal
even out there, like, just on a collective, like, so in the congregation of a church, for example, we were talking on for Friday morning about going through 1 Timothy, and we were in chapter 5 now, and about widows, and we were talking about how men in the Bible are seen as having this protective role, not just of their own wives and their own daughters, but of every woman
in the church.
In the church, they're your sisters, and so you and your mothers, and your and so you have to look at a woman and as not an object, not as competition, not as alien creature, but as your responsibility.
Yeah.
And I think that societally that would begin to heal some of this stuff.
Well, okay, so I think, I mean, we can blame men, but I think women have an incredible opportunity, Christian women, to invite men back into the space. I in the Episcopal Church, as a woman, I was advanced much more than men were. Mm-hmm.
You were a woman who was religious, and so
you
should be a priest,
right? Well, and I'm more like Jesus than anybody else, and it was interesting to me how helpless the men were, the male clergy. If I spoke, it was much more it had much more weight than when men spoke, and I had the opportunity to share the gospel with some of the male priests, and this. You know, as I went through the process, which really astonished me, we came into Good Shepherd. We acted very egalitarian in our in our ministry, which is fine. I have a really strong personality, but I've discovered over the last decade that we've been here that I can welcome. I have the because I'm accorded so much power as a woman culturally, especially in our denomination. I have the opportunity to welcome men in and lift them up and give them room to speak.
Right.
So, and to model that for other women. So I like to go to men in our church and say, I really need this done. What do you think? What do you think we should do here? What do you think would be wise? And then, you know, spread that around or encourage women to ask their husbands, what do you think here? Do you have any thoughts or feelings? Or are you just a paper cut out of a person? And I think you being actually a man and me helping to promote men...
We become complementarian, Marie, in the way
has
the church now.
But rebalanced the demographics of our church. So men and women are there in about equal measures. And our leadership is primarily male, mm-hmm. which is actually fantastic. Women, right. Shockingly, in our church, don't want to as much be on the board of deacons, who have to deal with the bureaucracy. They'd rather do other kinds of ministry. Sometimes you get a woman who really, really loves to talk about money and is good at that. But the real decisions of the church are largely in the hands of the men, which frees up the women to do things that are a lot more interesting to them. Which, again, shocking. You're not allowed to say that, but it's true. Most women don't really want to sit in an office all day talking about money. Many of them would rather be at home puttering and taking care of their children.
So that's true. Now, so, but okay. So now, let's say the reverse were true. Let's say we had a the congregation began, just pretend hypothetically.
It's 90% men.
Let's say hypothetically, the men began not so much caring about the children or the teaching of the church or the it was all about football and kind of a male social club. And the leadership of the church was not really invested in spiritual care.
Which I think is the case in many churches in other denominations.
That would provoke a kind of feminist uprising. You know?
But how could you...
You guys, if no one on this board is going to... No one in the leadership of this church is going to care for our children, we better get up there and do that.
Yeah.
If no one's going to care for the women having education at all, then we're going to have
to do that.
Then you end up with a feminist movement.
But I think male pastors can do the same thing on the other way, you know, that I've done with men in our church. The men could go to the women and say, what do you think? Do you have any thoughts or feelings? Do you have anything you want to say? What do you think? How do you think we should spend the money of the church? I mean, I know that's shocking in some denominations. I think it's interesting. It's shocking on both sides.
Right.
From in the left, for men to have personhood is shocking. On the right, for women to have personhood, to ask them, you know, would you, do you want to go to... Do you want to receive a higher education? Theology? Do you like to... are you good at math and science? Would you like to be on the financial committee of the church? That's really shocking. Or, you know...
But I think where the lines are clear, it can happen.
It can happen.
So when a man doesn't feel like his place is being usurped, and it's firm and secure and supported by the women of the church, then he's able to say, oh, well, help us with this.
Come
teach us how to do this, even.
Right,
I mean, teach us how to do finances or whatever it might be.
Or, you know, how to talk to women about theology, too.
Right,
you know, you can talk about theology with women. I know that's devastatingly shocking.
Sweetie, but did you know the relatively low level of information in a woman's brain?
So, didn't that... No, you should... We should... I'll link it again. But no, women know your limits. I thought that the women's march illustrated the absurdity of that video by making them all into venomous habitants. Like, if you... what is it?
Hagenins,
whatever. That watch...
We're talking about a video that will...
I'll link it, yeah. So, you know, that's absurd. Women can be educated. Except... I guess now, where women can't handle it, you know, and they can't think rationally, and they have to just screech like banshees. I think that's an aesthetic problem. I think the feminist movement, whatever wave it's on, should own that and apologize for looking foolish and for be clowning women everywhere.
I mean, did you read the sign? There's been going around a piece on Facebook that if Mary had had an abortion,
wouldn't be in this mess.
Right.
Yeah, that's embarrassing. That's stupid. You shouldn't put that on a sign. And you're wrong. And you're making yourself look stupid.
And there was like so much talk, or so many signs and talk, and part of the voice of the march had to do with menstruation.
I know. Because that's...
What?
I like to think about that a lot. That's my favorite thing to talk about and think about and wear clothing that represents it. Yeah.
What is... Can you explain to a male...
Why would you ask me to do that? I'm horrified.
I don't understand the I've seen this, it's not just the march, but it's a wonderful thing to...
Yeah, we should just...
Not hide and... What?
Actually, I can't explain that. I don't understand that at all.
Really?
I cannot.
I'm talking about that, right? That's
yeah,
a big
no, I know.
Of...
It's a big thing. There was that woman who ran a marathon and just let it all flow out as a mark of her power and her awesomeness. And I cannot enter into that mindset, nor do I really want to understand. I feel like I would make myself small and sad to try to understand why that's an awesome thing.
I just don't understand.
Well, it's really anti-biblical too, because one of the great things about God is that he clothes us, he takes care of us, he heals us, all the functions of our body can be within his care, and we don't have to
let them flow out.
We don't have
into the streets.
You don't just go and pee in the street. Well, I guess probably some
just
people
because
do
your
know.
Body is good and, and Jesus loves it doesn't mean that you let it all hang out and flow.
I mean, one of the greatest parts of the Bible is how God clothes the body, and he talks about that, and it's going to be even better than it is now.
Right.
But, so not, I don't want to understand.
Okay, well, good.
That, do you have any thoughts about why that might
be? No, I don't. I saw so many, though, and the signs were all about the nether regions and what happens down there.
That's super embarrassing.
As if there's like some male cabal that's trying to stop women from having menstruations or something. Stop women from... What? We must do something about this menstruation problem.
Okay, well, I do know that around the world, it's a point of solidarity around the women. Around the world, sometimes girls can't go to school because there's no way for them to be properly clothed and take care of themselves, and so they have to stay home from school regularly. And so as an act of solidarity, women in the West... Well, okay, so some people are trying to help with that problem, which I think is great. Let's do stuff to help those girls have whatever they need. But as an act of solidarity, I guess Western women think that we should just, not take care of ourselves that
Westerners
way.
Westerners are so ridiculous when it comes to acts of solidarity. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm going to only eat, millet for 2 weeks to show my solidarity with women in West Africa or men in West Africa. What does that accomplish? That makes you feel very righteous. It makes everyone else think, wow, that person's really righteous. And does it help the person who's eating millet? Nope, not at all. And so there all these symbolic displays of, it's very pharisaical.
Well, it's
watch me give the, watch me throw my large treasure into the treasury box and the, in the temple here, while Jesus...
It's virtue signal.
It's
Which I don't think is that interesting. I don't think we need to signal our virtue.
Right. Well, I mean, I guess it's that we're tapping into one other flow of talk. I didn't mean that. Flow of discussion they've had before, which is, it started with the 80s ribbons that you wear for this or that cause. And if you wear the ribbon, you are especially sensitive
to that particular
breast cancer.
Until your whole body is covered with ribbons.
Right. And that is the beginning of the modern era of virtue signaling, I think.
Yeah.
That now has taken
over. It's like a nuclear cloud of virtue signaling. It's just taken over everything so that you can't get away from it. And if you don't get on Facebook and signal your outrage over the correct issues, then you're not a good Christian. And there's something wrong with you if you're not continuously outraged about the plight of every single person on earth.
No, I know. I've had people mad at me before for not posting on certain subjects.
Yeah. You didn't care.
So it's my...
You need to post regularly about all the...
It's my responsibility to talk.
You can't post
about
the things
issue
that interest you.
Right.
So I felt the real power of the refugee crisis over the weekend. People were posting frantically on both ends of the spectrum about it.
Yeah.
And I decided not to post, and I knew I was being culturally rebellious by not posting about an issue that I wasn't on firm ground.
We just don't know
about
what,
and so I didn't want to post. And also, I don't know, I'm just rather post pictures of bunnies and kittens, but you can get in trouble socially for not signaling your outrage in regular. I think it's exhausting and bad.
Have you changed your profile picture to the latest?
Yeah.
Yeah. Flag du jour or cause du jour.
So I was going to blog about this later, but I have a solution because I'm a giver, not a taker. I have a solution to the Facebookization of American culture. And that's if you know somebody personally and you want to have a real relationship with them in real life, but they continuously post things that irritate you or make you feel angry about them, what you need to do is go up to the little corner of that post, to the little sort of downward arrows, and push that, and then push hide post, hide post. Every time they post something that makes you angry, don't get on and comment if they are making you angry. Hide that post so that you can charitably love them in real life.
So if you go to Thanksgiving dinner, you won't be arguing about
right. So politics. You just post, hide post. And the other thing you can do, if you know somebody, it's the election season, and you're really related to someone and you really know them and love them, what you can do is go in, unfriend them. You can say unfollow for a period of time. Unfollow that person. And then go back in when all the crisis is over and re-follow them. And I think that's a really good thing to do, because you don't need to be constantly angry with people for not lining up with your exact political stance on every issue, which is impossible. We were talking about this last night. In the past, what you would do if you wanted to talk politics was go and be face-to-face with somebody and talk politics, right? Like
yes.
At the bar. Then you'd go home, and you would stop thinking about politics until the next time you went there or you read the paper. Now, with our phones, everybody's political stances on every issue are right in your face all the time, and they're not going to perfectly line up with you. So you should hide those things.
And I wouldn't know, like, every single political view of my congregation.
Right.
And they wouldn't know all of my political views.
Right.
So we could love each other more easily.
But now, we all know everybody, every
now many everyone view. Knows.
So, I was going to say this. If you are mad at me because I don't want to be a feminist and you think that's stupid, every time you see a blog post of mine that has the word feminism, instead of reading the blog, just click hide post. Then you can be my friend. You won't be mad at me all the time.
Or share link, then hide post.
Oh, share link, hide post. Yeah.
You don't want your traffic to go down.
I don't want my traffic to go down. Yeah. But I also don't want to lose real people who like pictures of my dinner table, you know, because... So this is my... Actually, I was really thinking more about you. For people who are all the time mad at you, but have to be with you in real life, they should unfollow you if they really know you and they're always mad at you.
Who are you thinking of?
Nobody in particular.
I had one of your close family friends of your family side angry with me this weekend.
Yeah.
Because I mentioned the Episcopal Church being a heretical organization, and I made fun of a meme that the Episcopal Church put out from their Facebook page, which implied that the only place that Christians go to oppose the Episcopal Church's same-sex relationship juggernaut is Leviticus, and the meme was Jesus upset that he gave us a Bible with the Beatitudes and all we can do is quote Leviticus, which. You know, the assumption behind the meme was how wonderful and biblically not literate the Episcopal Church is. And in the meme, it just showed the
biblically illiterate.
Ignorant. Yeah, right, exactly. So anyway, your relative came on and said that I was violating my baptismal vows by critiquing the Episcopal Church.
And what I'm saying is she should have unfollowed you. Not blocked you. Unfollowed you.
If you
just see somebody that is always irritating you. Because you know what? Everybody's stuff is all over the place. I've been irritated with almost everybody I know in the last year politically because they haven't perfectly aligned themselves with me. And so they're wrong. And I was really angry for a while, but now I systematically go through. So over the weekend, anybody that mentioned the word immigration or refugee, I hid the post without even reading it. Because I didn't want to go on this roller coaster of outrage.
And that's not because you're a Trump fan.
No, it's not.
We tend not to be.
Not a Trump fan. Right. Not a Trump fan.
Right. So we've been talking now for 40-something minutes, and we haven't mentioned the Women's March, the March for Life.
That's not as exciting. It was so staid and respectful.
What a contrast, though.
Is there to say? I can't be outraged about it.
Well, I think next year, like we said last time, we had a lot of people from our church go, which is great. Mm-hmm. But next year, we should have more visible Anglican presence because apparently the Catholics had their...
Yeah, I heard there were tons. They were there barefoot.
Oh, no, that's really...
Yeah. And actually, I do have... Maybe
gold stars in heaven for
I do there. Have one small...
Less time in purgatory for the... I bet that's exactly why.
Because
if you suffer now...
You don't have to suffer later.
Right, because Jesus, wasn't enough. But the...
Don't bash our Catholic listener.
I'm not bashing her, but...
Okay, my one criticism of the March for Life speeches, I got to watch some of them, not as many as I wanted, was that everybody had to do due honor, due acclaim to President Trump. Almost every speech that I watched had this, deep, profound, thankful voice, of love for our new dear leader, and that really creeped me out because he hasn't done anything yet, so we don't need to thank him for being the most pro-life president ever or whatever that I heard people say over and over again.
Although he is going to he's going to nominate a Supreme Court.
Okay, that's great. I'd like to see it, but
the Mexico City thing.
It hasn't happened yet.
The Mexico City thing.
But he doesn't have a track record. We don't need to praise and honor him yet.
Right. I think we can praise and honor the good decisions that he's made so far on pro-life issues, which are good.
Yeah.
They're good.
Well, I don't like the sycophantic note.
No, I don't either. I saw it too.
So it didn't made me uncomfortable.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's great to have that many. I read, I'm not sure, that the numbers were as great or greater than the Women's March.
Oh, really?
And you had a lot of people there this time. The weather was good. Was good. And I was happy to see it, although I didn't see it in too many news outlets.
They have a few, though, probably more than last year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're excited for life. For this new pro-life generation, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, well, that's another thing that one of our parishioners yesterday who went said that, most of the people there were young, not old. He said the millennial crowd there was pretty huge, which is good because, in a movement like this, you'd think, oh, well, the first generation got really upset, but it's going to die down. But no, it's actually building. The younger people, the younger generation is more hyped up about this than...
Wow.
The older one, which is great. That's fantastic. Yeah, I think we've done this. I think the one thing that Christians have done we've done a good job of passing on the importance of not aborting babies to our Christian people who come after us. I remember at Good Shepherd, we had students who were very liberal.
Mm-hmm.
But we were able to communicate.
Got sold on this issue.
We were able to communicate, killing a baby in the womb legally is not equal to providing health care and because the tendency on liberal Christian from liberal Christians is to see abortion as just one issue among other equally important issues like feeding the poor, and whereas in reality you look at we've mentioned the Nazi state which had full employment and health care for all citizens, and yet had also engaged in the systematic murder of one group of them. And so, no, it's not having people who are less than equal economically is not the same as, you know, murder. So we were able to communicate that. And so now you have, even we still have some leftist, I'm sorry, liberal and other areas.
You're going to congregation. You're going to insult their congregation.
In our congregation, but who see abortion as so important that they're not voting for pro-abortion politicians on either side of the, mm-hmm. of the aisle.
Which does narrow down your options in each election system, which is a cycle. But it's fantastic. It's hopeful.
Yeah.
I just hope that when we get to all be pro-life or get to have, you know, less slaughter, that we're going to have swallowed some other ghastly thing from Trump as payment for ending abortion.
That's
my concern.
Well, that's the give and take. You know, the Germans had to get full employment and healthcare, had to sacrifice their Jews. That's what they did.
The other way around, like...
So what are we going to sacrifice to...
To end the killing. What are we going to have to...
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question.
What are we going to give up?
If he's really the kind of demagogue that people say that he is, that's going to be a calculus that we're going to have to worry about in the future.
Yeah.
So, or now.
Well, we don't know what it is yet, so we shouldn't worry about it.
Yeah.
Because we don't know.
Yeah.
So, I think we've covered all the topics.
We've beaten everything to death today.
So, and we have a lot of work to do, so we're going to... go on, and it's almost February, so we've survived the first few weeks of Trump. Yay, America. Thanks for listening.